time to conduct a good deal of solid science. He became the world's foremost authority on thermodynamics, and the first to elucidate the principles of the convection of fluids and the circulation of ocean currents. He also invented several useful objects, including a drip coffee maker, thermal underwear, and a type of range still known as the Rumford fireplace. In 1805, during a sojourn in France, he wooed and married Madame Lavoisier, widow of Antoine Laurent. The marriage was not a success, and they soon parted. Rumford stayed on in France, where he died, universally esteemed by all but his former wives, in 1814. But our purpose in mentioning him here is that in 1799, during a comparatively brief interlude in London, he founded the Royal Institution, yet another of the many learned societies that popped into being all over Britain in the late 18th and early 19th centuries. For a time, it was almost the only institution of standing to actively promote the young science of chemistry. And that was thanks almost entirely to a brilliant young man named Humphry Davy, who was appointed the institution's professor of chemistry shortly after its inception, and rapidly gained fame as an outstanding lecturer and productive experimentalist. Soon after taking up his position, Davy began to bang out new elements one after another: potassium, sodium, magnesium, calcium, strontium, and aluminum, or aluminium, depending on which branch of English you favor. The confusion of the aluminum-aluminium spelling arose because of some uncharacteristic indecisiveness on Davy's part. When he first isolated the element in 1808, he called it alumium. For some reason, he thought better of that and changed it to aluminum 4 years later. Americans dutifully adopted the new term, but many British users disliked aluminum, pointing out that it disrupted the ium pattern established by sodium, calcium, and strontium, so they added a vowel and syllable. He discovered so many elements not so much because he was seriously astute as because he developed an ingenious technique of applying electricity to a molten substance, electrolysis as it is known. Altogether, he discovered a dozen elements, a fifth of the known total of his day. Davy might have done far more, but unfortunately, as a young man, he developed an abiding attachment to the buoyant pleasures of nitrous oxide. He grew so attached to the gas that he drew on it, literally, 3 or 4 times a day. Eventually, in 1829, it is thought to have killed him. Fortunately, more sober types were at work elsewhere. In 1808, a Dour Quaker named John Dalton became the first person to intimate the nature of an atom, progress that will be discussed more completely a little further on. And in 1811, an Italian with a splendidly operatic name of Lorenzo Romano Amadeo Carlo Avogadro, Count of Caracqua and Cerrito, made a discovery that would prove highly significant in the long term, namely, that two equal volumes of gases of any type, if kept at the same pressure and temperature, will contain identical numbers of molecules. Two things were notable about Avogadro's principle as it became known. First, it provided a basis for more accurately measuring the size and weight of atoms. Using Avogadro's mathematics, chemists were eventually able to work out, for instance, that a typical atom had a diameter of 0.00000008 centimeters, which is very little indeed. And second, almost no one knew about Avogadro's appealingly simple principle for almost 50 years. The principle led to the much later adoption of Avogadro's number, a basic unit of measure in chemistry, which was named for Avogadro long after his death. It is the number of molecules found in 2.016 grams of hydrogen gas, or an equal volume of any other gas. Its value is placed at 6.0221367 times 10 to the power of 23, which is an enormously large number. Chemistry students have long amused themselves by computing just how large a number it is, so I can report that it is equivalent to the number of popcorn kernels needed to cover the United States to a depth of 9 miles, or cupfuls of water in the Pacific Ocean, or soft drink cans that would, evenly stacked, cover the Earth to a depth of 200 miles. An equivalent number of American pennies would be enough to make every person on Earth a dollar trillionaire. It is a big number. No one knew about his principle because Avogadro himself was a retiring fellow. He worked alone, corresponded very little with fellow scientists, published few papers, and attended no meetings. But also it was because there were no meetings to attend, and few chemical journals in which to publish. This is a fairly extraordinary fact. The Industrial Revolution was driven in large part by developments in chemistry, and yet as an organized science, chemistry barely existed for decades. The Chemical Society of London was not founded until 1841, and didn't begin to produce a regular journal until 1848, by which time most learned societies in Britain, geological, geographical, zoological, horticultural, and Linnaean, for naturalists and botanists, were at least 20 years old, and often much more. The rival Institute of Chemistry didn't come into being until 1877, a year after the founding of the American Chemical Society. Because chemistry was so slow to get organized, news of Avogadro's important breakthrough of 1811 didn't begin to become general until the first International Chemistry Congress in Karlsruhe in 1860. Because chemists for so long worked in isolation, conventions were slow to emerge. Until well into the second half of the century, the formula H2O2 might mean water to one chemist, but hydrogen peroxide to another. C2H4 could signify ethylene or marsh gas. There was hardly a molecule that was uniformly represented everywhere. Scientists also used a bewildering variety of symbols and abbreviations, often self-invented. Sweden's J.J. Berzelius brought a much-needed measure of order to matters by decreeing that the elements be abbreviated on the basis of their Greek or Latin names, which is why the abbreviation for iron is Fe, from the Latin ferrum, and that for silver is Ag, from the Latin argentum. But so many of the other abbreviations accord with their English names, N for nitrogen, O for oxygen, H for hydrogen, and so on, reflects English's Latinate nature, not its exalted status. To indicate the number of atoms in a molecule, Berzelius employed a superscript notation, as in H to the power of 2O. Later, for no special reason, the fashion became to render the number as subscript, H2O. Despite the occasional tidyings up, chemistry by the second half of the 19th century was in something of a mess, which is why everybody was so pleased by the rise to prominence in 1869 of an odd and crazed-looking professor at the University of St. Petersburg named Dmitri Ivanovich Mendeleev. Mendeleev, also sometimes spelled